You're listening to your NBA podcast with Larry O'Brien.
Kang, you woke me up. You just gave me a 30-minute lecture, 30-minute schooling on morality while you surround yourself with wife beaters and sexual assaulters. Okay, we'll talk about the Mavs. We'll talk about the Mavs and Jason Kidd later.
I love Jason Kidd. What did he do? What are you talking about? I choose to forget that.
Let me start with this. It's been a big week for you. Specifically, Mr. Tom Brady, he's back, feeling good, seen enough of his family. Family time's over. Tell me more.
Earlier than expected to. Because usually, like, other retirement, like, kind of false retirement news, they will wait until close to training camp before they say, like, okay, I'm back. All right, I'm back. I've spent the past 5 months with my family. That's enough. I've got the itch. I got to come back and play football. But in Tom Brady's case, it's like, okay, 40 days after the season's over, which, you know, like, less than 2 months. Okay, that's it. Giselle, I'm going back to Tampa. 6 weeks. So obviously he timed it strategically because his announcement came at the beginning of free agency. So a lot of those guys that were on the verge with signing with other teams potentially, or, you know, rumored to look elsewhere, suddenly said, like, okay, Tom Brady's back. Like, I'm back then. A few good players for the Bucks have renegotiated and upped the deals, new contracts with the Bucks, you know, team-friendly deals that have, low salary numbers at the beginning of the years. Anyway, just whatever, all these salary cap gymnastics to get everyone on the cap, get all the good players on the cap and potentially other free agents that want to join. You mentioned the sexual assault, Antonio Brown. He's gone. He's off this team for good. I'm glad. But you didn't know, like, I'm surprised you didn't hear about this, but Deshaun Watson is literally the king. And this is, like, in the worst way possible. He's like the king of sexual assault. He has 22 civil cases, of allegations of sexual assault, 22 cases. That means 22 women have come forward and have said that Deshaun Watson is basically a creep and touched them inappropriately or assaulted them or raped them, perhaps. It's probably the worst because there's other cases you can make, but, like, you know, Ray Rice. Ray Rice was a former running back for the Ravens who beat up his pregnant fiance in a lift and dragged her out of the lift and was knocked her out and dragged her unconscious body out from the lift. And initially, the NFL didn't do anything about it. Apparently, they had the problem. Tape. And they're like, no problem, this guy's a star player and we're not going to do anything. It's only when that video became public and, you know, TMZ was posting it all over the website, that's when the NFL took action.
For background, because I'm not in line with the NFL here, tell me about Deshaun Watson. Why is he a good player? Why should I care about this?
Yeah, so Deshaun Watson is a really good player. Like, I think two seasons ago, he signed, like, a massive contract, his second contract after his rookie contract. So he's still young. I think he's probably 26, 25 years old. Franchise player. Signed a big contract with the Houston Texans. I still remember, like, that post-conference after he signed, he was, like, crying, like, talking about, like, how much he wants to thank his family and the organization for believing in him. I think it was a fourth overall pick or top 10 overall pick, like, first round pick. Like, he has all the pedigree and all the talent and even showed it on the field, like, how amazing and talented he was. Quarterbacks are hard to find, and he's one of the best young ones out there. It was probably talked about in the same breath as, like, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen before his downfall. So I think last season, around this time, he was accused of all these gross allegations. Multiple women came forward. Like, at first it was like 2, 3, 4, and just kept going, like 12, 16, 18, 22. 22 women came forward and accused him of sexual assault. And he took last season off. From that sort of spotlight, he didn't want to play under those conditions and circumstances. And obviously, there was a legal case that was hovering over him. He didn't play at all last season. He just was on the team, and I think he was able to go to the facility and train perhaps, but he did not play a single game. Fast forward to maybe last week, the court ruled him, basically, he can't go to jail for these accusations. Right. The court said that they're not going to take on this case and he's not going to jail. But he's still liable for civil, I don't know, I don't know all these words, but it's still a civil case going forward, and maybe there'll be settlement with these women individually. But it doesn't even heal there, because the point is the NFL and NFL teams see this as a win because he can play football technically. Right. He can come back and he's not going to go to jail. Like the legal system isn't going to take him away for extended period of time. Just like other players have, like Michael Vick, for example. And, you know, history shows like if you're a talented quarterback, even jail won't stop you from re-signing with the team. He came back and signed a $100 million contract after jail, and he was busted for dogfighting, that despicable kind of act. You know, years ago. Deshaun Watson's scum, right? So you can talk about Antonio Brown and all his past misgivings and, you know, terrible things that he's done in the past, and they're not forgivable, but compared to Deshaun Watson, Antonio Brown's a saint. Deshaun Watson is just vile scum. And a lot of teams were trying to get his services, like trying to give the farm, sell the farm, trade everything, trade multiple draft picks to get Deshaun Watson. And finally, after multiple teams sent private jets to pick him up and send him to facilities, send him to their cities and the full buffet service, he picks the Cleveland Browns. Because Cleveland, from the Texans' perspective, gave him 3 first-round picks and a couple other picks. And to Deshaun Watson, they re-upped his contract, gave him more money, and I think it was the first time ever, they gave him a $250 million fully guaranteed contract. Fully guaranteed, that is rare in the NFL. In the NBA, that's pretty commonplace. $250 million is basically a supermax contract. But very rare for the NFL. Even for quarterbacks, you know, some of the most famous people in the world, it doesn't happen. And especially Tom Brady has never gotten that type of money. And Deshaun Watson especially should not have received this money, given that even though he won't go to jail, he could still be suspended next season. He definitely will get suspended from, you know, either 4 games to 6 games to 17 games, like the entire season. Potentially, who knows? It depends on what Roger Goodell decides. But, you know, the other kind of serious shit that has gone on recently with suspensions was there's a player in the NFL named Calvin Ridley who's been suspended for the entire season. He's already been suspended for the entire season for gambling. $1,500. He bet on his team while he was injured. He put $1,500 on his team.
At least he's betting on his own team.
He's betting on his own team while he was injured. So he didn't have he couldn't make any impact. He was just rooting for his team and put $1,500 with just chump change. Obviously, he's going to pay for it because he's now suspended for the entire year. So you're telling me that a person betting $1,500 on gambling on the NFL's own sport book, like sporting gambling provider, is going to get banned for an entire year?
And he was betting on his team winning, right?
And he's betting on his own team winning too.
Yeah. So in other words, he wasn't playing the game that he's betting them to lose.
He wasn't playing the game. He wasn't influencing anything. He was sitting at home and just decided to use the NFL's partner gambling site to put $1,500 of his own money to his own team.
No, can't do that.
Obviously dumb, like he shouldn't do that. Like he should be disciplined, but the entire season is very, very harsh. And you contrast that with other situations like Michael Vick, like a Ray Rice. I think Ray Rice only got suspended 4 games for bashing a pregnant woman, knocking her unconscious and dragging her from lift. And Michael Vick too, I think didn't serve a single, I don't think he got suspended at all. They're very, very minimal. He just because he went to jail for 2 years, I think the NFL basically like called it even.
Apparently people care more about dogs than like females.
Yeah, exactly. But when he came back, because he could still throw the ball, he got given a $100 million contract. Mm. You talk about, you know, sexual assault, like it's rife. Like you know, you're looking at, like in the NBA, you know, as we'll talk about the Mavericks, Mark Cuban turning a blind eye to a lot of the stuff. But I'm sure it happens with a lot of these old tycoons that own teams, these old white tycoons. They don't view women as humans, basically. They view them as a property because that's how they grew up. And given their wealth and status, they you only have to look as far as Donald Trump on a hot mic and the vile things Donald Trump would say as locker room talk. It's just permeating throughout that culture. And when a top player like that who can still benefit and win your games does these kind of things to dozens of women, it doesn't matter. The only thing they care about is if he's in jail, because if he's in jail, then he can't contribute to winning. But if he's not going to jail, everything else can be swept under the rug through the powerhouse PR machine that the NFL, especially the NFL, can do. Because the NFL is like, look, we love women. We're going to celebrate Breast Cancer Awareness Week. Everyone's going to be wearing pink gloves. Everyone's going to be wearing pink ribbons on the collars.
Yeah, look at our coaches. They love their wife. They're sharing their bikini wife photos.
Exactly.
We love our wives.
I mean, to be fair, John Gruden did lose his job. So, you know, it's inconsistent and they need to be better. But
he also has some words for black people.
Yeah, racism. Yeah, when it comes to racism, it's like, oh, it's not on as well. I mean, it's, I don't know. Racism is bad. Beating up women is very bad too. I don't know. It's just a horrible kind of place. And it just makes me think, if I was a Buccaneers, honestly, I was already on, you can talk about James Winston. Like, I think two of them are very bad.
Preempted me. Okay. You're learning, young Kane.
But Antonio Brown is, I remember like when Antonio Brown came on the team, I was
you loved it.
Pretty upset, but ultimately I was thinking like, okay.
I don't know about that. Pretty upset.
I was ultimately thinking like, okay, like he deserves a fourth chance, right? Everyone deserves a fourth chance. But if Tom Brady stayed retired and the Buccaneers probably would have tried to pursue Deshaun Watson in some manner and got him, I think pursuing is one thing because you can kind of sweep it under the rug more easily. But if you actually have this guy on your team, it's impossible to sweep under the rug. Like, you have the dude that treats women like this, basically. And if the Bucks got Deshaun Watson, it's hard to say, but I'll probably distance myself.
You love it. Can't wait. Monday morning, let's go.
It's hard to say. I don't envy Browns fans because, yeah, they got a generational quarterback, but at what cost?
You've given me a lot of context and background to this, because when this deal happened, you texted me. It's like, did you see this happen? And I was like, okay, this guy's got a...
Who is this guy?
Well, I knew the name, but I was like, he got a big contract. Like, so what? And I heard about this, a player that had all the sexual assault issues, but I forgot the name, right? I didn't think it was this guy.
Mm.
I can see now how this is such a ridiculous...
This is
thing, big. Right?
This is honestly like this is like one of the biggest.
This
stories
is a huge
in terms
story.
Of like horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like horrible stories go. This is like when Ray Rice happened. It's like that level. But that was such a shock to NFL circles because we've never seen on video that type of treatment to like, you know, someone being so violent. You know.
Right.
And I think if video surfaces of what Deshaun Watson has done, then it's over. Like, just whatever. I don't even know. Like, they rip up his contract or they kill him. I don't know. I honestly don't know what would happen. But because there's no video, there's no hard evidence of what he's done. It's just he said she's, multiple she's have said.
Mm.
It's kind of like their words against, you know, it's, you know, his word against their words, basically. So it's easier to sweep under the rug for the PR machine of NFL.
So for a bit of context, before our show, Kane gave me a whole lesson on standing up to what's right, social issues. Now that knowing this has happened, knowing this is what is the stance of this league, the NFL, how do you feel about the game on Monday? Looking forward to it?
I'm like one foot out with the NFL, just... This is one thing, like, this has been something that's always been on the surface and I don't like it. The other thing, obviously, is the inherent violence, the inherent ignorance and deliberate ignorance with how players you know, after they retire, like the type of brain damage they get, and trying to distance themselves from that. Even though like so many brains have been donated to science from NFL players, they've discovered some kind of form of CTE, some kind of brain damage, basically. And the other thing is now it's a normalization of betting. I can't fathom why people, if you know how to bet and you want to do it safely in your own sort of app, then that's fine. But I don't understand why they have to shove those betting lines on every single app now. ESPN is showing it, and like, you know, the Bleacher Report is showing the odds, and all the podcasters are talking about the lines and stuff. Like, they always have to talk about the lines. Like, I'm not betting. Like, who cares? It's still niche, right? Like, why do we have to make it a mainstream thing? Just if you want to make money out of it, then
this is a new revenue stream.
Yeah, I don't like it because the NFL is always against it. NFL was always trying to like Vegas was such a black spot for the NFL because only in Vegas could you be betting on NFL games.
Well, NBA is prepping for this new revenue stream from betting and gambling. And I've noticed a lot of podcasters, they have commercials for, you know, the online betting providers. And of course, those commercials are ridiculous because they have to spend like 30 seconds reading some disclaimer about if you have gambling issues, you know, call this line. The NFL is corrupt. The NFL is not a product that I support because, you know, personally, I have just a stronger moral compass than some. It's full of criminals. And I'm not talking about
thugs.
I'm not talking.
Did you say thugs, David?
Thugs. No, slugs.
Did you call
slugs?
Them thugs?
Don't put words in my mouth. I said slugs. Okay.
Slugs. Yeah, sorry. I hate thugs.
It's full of criminals. And guess what? I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about the front offices. I'm talking about the white man that runs this league. It starts from the top. The rot starts from the top. I'm talking about Robert Goodell.
Roger.
Who gets paid. How much does he get paid? He gets paid like $100 million or something, right? He gets paid some obscene.
No, I think it's paid like $50 million. But it's charity, so I think it's tax-free.
How is this guy getting... First of all, someone should investigate why any commissioner, league commissioner, is getting paid $50 million. Okay, what job is he... What kind of job is he doing in order to get paid $50 million.
He's doing for the owners. The owners are paying. The owners are paying him.
Right. So I put this on. I put this a lot of this blame on the owners, on Goodell, where the money is so great that they just overlook all these things. Like you said, when we had Ray Rice beating up, knocking his wife unconscious in an elevator, it was no problem, no issues. Okay. The league office had the tape. It was only after tape circulated and there was an outlash that the league felt they had to step in. So, and this is a perfect example where you have this criminal molesting women, 20 plus women, right? And this is the people that actually stepped out. And more importantly, you know, what is the environment that he finds himself where this is allowed to happen? This is enabled.
It's not only enabled, he's also been rewarded. He's been
That's
rewarded
a good point.
With the richest contract in NFL history.
What kind of signal is that sending to this Deshaun Watson dude? That he's made a terrible mistake? Or that, hey, it's okay. Look, this is actually a huge risk. If this player was available for the Bucks, I know about your love for the Bucks. You overlook a lot of things. We won't talk about Jameis Winston. Your guy, okay? We won't talk about his history. Jameis Winston, peanuts compared to this guy. Peanuts. And I think you're right.
Thank you.
In having hesitation, even if the Bucks got someone like this, because this can't end well. It's a landmine. There's no good. There's no good ending to this.
Yeah, exactly. Even if they win a championship, it's like at what cost? You're enabling and financially rewarding this guy for successfully sweeping up under the. It's basically a win for the front offices and his agent. They just did the most masterful job of sweeping all of this under the rug and blaming those women. It's like all those defense lawyers 101, you know, you make those women compromised, like their backgrounds and their stories look more compromised and unverified. But look at this millionaire, like, oh, they, you know, they're going after this millionaire's money. this is the guy that, you know, like has made it on his own, and now he's one of the richest quarterbacks, and all these women are just after money. You know, like it's that same old story that the rich people can use against disadvantaged and disenfranchised women that have been wronged and, you know, feel wronged. And, you know, it's just the rich and powerful being able to narrate that story in for their advantage. And, you know, the common people like us that were fans of the team and trying to support them and trying to find justification to support him are saying like, okay, he's a great player, he's doing all these wins, but like, honestly, at what cost? And that's why I'm saying, like, I don't envy Browns fans, because they've been such a terrible team for so long. Lucky they have had the Cavs and LeBron James joined the team. But if they're just football fans, it's just been a horrible decades and decades of losing. And now that finally they have a good team with a competent quarterback, and it's like, okay, I have to look at this guy who, if you have a mom or wife or daughter, thinking he would treat your significant other, your loved one, a female loved one, in that way, if given the chance that, you know, they were alone in a room together, you know?
Luckily, I don't endorse this product. I don't watch this product. How about UK? how are your Bucks?
I mean, I'm glad Tom Brady is back, because he's a saint, you know? He honestly is a saint.
Look, I don't envy you.
I think Tom Brady is almost the same level as Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady, like when he came back, some guy bought his last ball. They bought his last ball for $500,000, his last touchdown football.
Yeah, I heard
they paid $500,000 in auction. And then Tom Brady is like going to give him some Bitcoin in like to like pay him back.
That's pretty cool.
It's like not worth. So he's a good man. I mean, he's rich, and he, you know, his wife is probably richer than he is. So, you know, it doesn't matter to him. He's just he would play in the NFL for literally $1 million if he really had to, because he just loves playing football,
especially obviously. In San Francisco.
And huh?
Especially in San Francisco, if the Buccaneers could let him go.
All right, should we talk about the NBA?
Don't change the subject. I'll ask you anyway this question, which is, now there's some famous podcasters based in Boston who is still saying that Tom Brady, there's still a 40% chance that Tom Brady ends up in San Francisco on the 49ers, despite the fact that he's just unretired and is now still under contract with the Buccaneers, or that Bruce Arians is on the outs, that he'll be fired. What's your take on this as a lifelong Buccaneer fan? Is this just hearsay rumors, or are there some truth in this?
I mean, I assume you're talking about Bill Simmons.
I didn't want to bring him up, this name.
Who probably thinks Jason Tatum is better than Kevin Durant, probably.
Jason Tatum? I'm pretty sure he thinks Jaylen Brown's better than Kevin Durant.
He probably at one point thought like the 2017 team, was it? 2018 Celtics team was like the best Celtics team you know, ever, probably. And like they were unjust by Giannis or something. I don't know. He probably hates Kyrie Irving, I assume.
What do you mean? My God. That's enemy number one.
He probably thinks the Brooklyn Nets are like the devil, and everything happening right now is karma. I agree with that a little bit.
Insights, but has lots of insights on the Boston scene, and probably has some insights in this situation with Tom Brady as well.
He was fired, right? He was fired from ESPN. Okay. He doesn't have any. His reputation is tarnished, right?
I don't know. He's pretty.
This guy, when he was on national TV, he was even then he was so biased. When he was on national ESPN TV, I don't even know what show he was on, like what ESPN product he was on. But I even like watching on ESPN. I didn't even like watching on ESPN or even on draft night, because his takes were always so like one-sided. It just annoyed the shit out of me. I don't trust anything he says. I think everything he says is wrong. It's hard to hate someone that I don't know as much as whatever.
Okay, so you dismiss this stuff. This is just hearsay. There's no it's not realistic to think that Tom Brady, the fact that he's on retire, he said that on his Instagram that he's on retiring and will be with the Buccaneers, that within the next 2 or 3 months, he'll be in San Francisco.
Yeah, this is the shit that I assume probably Fox Sports say.
Right.
Like, they just make up these stories and just for clickbait. Just so shows like us would like spend even like a few minutes talking about it because he used to be somebody in the industry.
Okay.
But he's literally nobody and he's just spinning up these, like, he's worse than Wendy, honestly.
Leave Wendy out of this.
I used to not like Wendy because
you like him now.
He was too much of a beat reporter. He was too much on the. He was too much of a team reporter. He was always reporting just for the team, and he had no other takes. And I felt that he was just following LeBron. Basically, he would just be reporting on LeBron, and I was like, "Where's the courage in that? Like, why don't you take a chance with other teams and you know try and make a name for yourself apart from LeBron?" And he was just riding on LeBron's coattails. Maybe that has enabled him to elevate to a national audience, and now he doesn't report so much on LeBron, so that's probably why I respect him a little bit more. But now that I'm thinking about it, it's making me angry again, because got to his position because he was so afraid of doing any other market apart from LeBron James. He was following the Cleveland Cavaliers, he was following the Miami Heat, and then by then he probably got promoted. But before then, it was just riding LeBron's coattails, and now it's making me angry again.
I'm sorry I triggered you. I apologize. I apologize to Wendy.
I don't think a lot of these journalists that make these national stages and big time shows on ESPN, they're not owning it like meritocratically.
I know what you're saying.
Not, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that they've made it just with their brash comments and the clickbait like headlines. And because of that, everyone thinks of Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Smith is a personality. He can talk the shit, but at least that's his personality. You can't just talk the shit and make shit up and be like a Stephen A. Because as much as everyone hates Stephen A., like, he's his own brand. He's made his career on these type of bold takes and talking about, you know, Black people, basically, and how they've been wrong. That's what he's made his brand on. But not everyone can just talk about their own shit and make up their own headlines and think that they can be Stephen A. Smith, you know?
Okay.
It doesn't work for you.
So that first part of that rumor, the fact that he'll be back on San Francisco, you said there's no truth in that.
If that happens, if that happens, then all the respect to Bill Simmons, his sources are correct, and he's a fine journalist. But if it doesn't happen, it just reinforces my belief that he's just a shit talker, clickbait journalist, and he has no shred of dignity.
It's not just a possibility. He's saying 40% possibility, which is substantial, right?
Which is quite high, which is like basically 50-50.
Let's put that aside. The second part I find actually more interesting, and potentially, well, that's why I want to get your take on it.
What the hell is 40%? 40% means there's a good possibility that it's happening.
That's like, it's a 50-50 chance, right? This is like, it's a toss-up,
basically,
right? Yeah. But the second thing that he said, when I thought this was actually quite interesting and maybe possible, that's why I want to hear your take on this, is that Bruce Arians is somehow on the outs, and that Tom Brady and Bruce Arians, there's a little bit of friction there. And this is, I think, based on some facts, because when the rumors were going around that Tom Brady will unretire, Bruce Arians, he, in his press conferences and statements, I didn't really feel like he was giving Tom Brady like the faux respect.
From reading the tea leaves, I kind of do see that. Like, there is a bit of friction between them in a way, because Bruce Arians likes the offense to run his way. And that's like counter to Tom Brady. Like, Tom Brady has basically been the offensive coordinator for his team for the last decade. So for Bruce Arians to influence the team to run his playbook probably does have some friction with Tom Brady and Tom Brady's disciples like Rob Gronkowski and other guys that Tom Brady. But I mean, these guys are men. Like, this is football. Like, it's like you said to me, like, this is not fucking kindergarten. You have disagreements, you talk about it. You're men, they want a Super Bowl together. They're capable of disagreeing and working through it. They don't have to disagree and fight and divorce each other. Like, come on, grow up. Like, a disagreement isn't automatic, you know, fraction or automatic divorce. Frictions are just part of human nature, and we all get through it. And friction is what makes diamonds, right? Literally diamonds that they're wearing on their rings because they won the fucking Super Bowl.
Oh, okay, can't argue there. No argument there.
So, yeah. Like, I don't know, just... I also don't like how these national journalists talking about the Bucks, because the Bucks have always been such a underreported team, and now that they're like a mainstream, a national team, these guys love talking about, oh, like, they got some great players, and they like quote like a few players that they like the name wrong. There's this guy named Chris Godwin that was like, oh, you know, Chris Goodwin's a good player. And then they have, you know, like Lavont David. Like, mispronounce his name wrong. Like, they don't know what they're talking about. They're just looking at the depth chart and like, oh, I've heard of him before. Oh, I think he made a Pro Bowl before. Like, oh, I think he's a pretty good player. Look his stats last year. He got 9 sacks last year. Oh, he must be a good player. Like, these guys don't know what they're talking about most of the time.
Mm.
And like, now that they're stepping in, they hear these rumors from sources. And they're like blowing it up because Tampa is now a hot story. So anything you talk about Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it's fun for me, but it's just proving like these, like, unless you're one of these top franchises like the New York Giants, the Green Bay Packers, the San Francisco 49ers,
Giants, what a joke,
Dallas Cowboys. Usually, no one gives a shit. Like if you're the Falcons or the Jaguars or the Buccaneers or the Bengals, no one gives a shit. You know. They only give a shit if it coincides with another team or you're finally good. That's it. So the Bucks are finally good. So they're finally having the hot girl summer, and it's fun for us because, you know, we're seeing this team that used to be like the ugly stepsister become, you know, having the, you know, becoming a slut basically, like just getting every player on the team, selling their morals, having Antonio Brown just. Getting the freak on.
Girls and Antonio Brown is a bad combination, because, okay? Females, you know, and Antonio Brown, let's just keep those things away from each other.
I'm just saying, like, the Bucks are having, unprecedented hot girl summer.
Yeah.
And now all these teams, you know, want a piece of that. Oh, all these journalists want a piece of that. But they went on this girl before when she was wearing glasses. And her hair was frizzy. They didn't know much about her beef then, but now that she's hot and she got a boob job, now they're saying like, it's some great players on this team, and they still have a great roster, and Tom Brady is just the shit of it all. And like, they don't know anything. They know Tom Brady and Bruce Arians, and that's it. Don't pretend. I know this entire team's history for the last 20 years, and these guys are fucking, you know, joining on. I'm a day one. These guys are
okay, you know, day
5,022.
Look, I agree. There's a bit of, I don't know if it's good. I think maybe overall net, it's a good thing, because even though a lot of these stories are a bit sensationalistic, I think it does give the spotlight to Tampa. It makes them relevant.
Yeah, like I said, it's just fun.
Especially for the casual fans. Obviously, it could be annoying for hardcore fans like yourself who's been cheering this team.
I didn't say it was annoying. I don't know. I'm not saying it's annoying. It's just what it is. I'm just ignoring it and it's whatever.
Right,
like,
right.
I've been through it now for 2 years now, so I'm used to all this shit that they say, and I know how to wade through this shit. It doesn't annoy
me.
Okay. But now that you're like kind of bringing it to my attention. Dave, I've been listening to you, Dave. You've been saying shit. I'm just talking about the NBA. I've been sitting on this. I remember the other day, I was like, we were talking through the Nets and the Blazers, and you're like, oh, you know the Blazers are trying to tank, right? When the Nets are losing. I'm like, yeah, I fucking know. I fucking know that.
I'm sorry.
I know the fucking Blazers are trying to tank.
Okay, let's get back to NBA. So look, Bruce, ignore the media. You gotta listen to your real fans, right?
He's got chill. Yeah, I agree with that though. He does have to chill a little bit. Like, he's Bruce Arians is probably Hall of Famer now.
So, Bruce, look, chill. Rest those Achilles, you know. Come back strong.
Yeah, take that. Yeah, rehab that.
Rehab the Achilles. Yeah. Just keep your...
He'll be back to slapping...
Don't do that. Keep your hands off him.
He'll be back to slapping his players.
Look, okay, keep your hands off. Keep your hands off the players.
I love it. I love that fire, honestly. He's like literally 70 years old, God. And he's like fucking hitting like 22-year-old, 6'5" men.
If you need to squeeze something to release the stress, maybe squeeze some of those footballs. Tommy likes them soft.
Shut up. First okay,
up, he likes the footballs.
That sounds warranted.
Okay.
Stop laughing.
I'm sorry. Don't hate me, Kane. Okay.
No one gets it.
You take it from here. What do you want to talk about? Because I feel like you've got some things on your mind here.
We want to go happy or do we want to go dark? Because it can go like both ways here.
Let's do something lightweight and then let's talk about Cavs. Or sorry, not the Cavs, the Mavs. Because I feel that's a pretty important story, okay? But let's just quickly do a couple of injury updates because I think this is actually, it's small but significant. The first is that Wiseman was supposed to be back as now there's reports that he's got knee pains or what pain? He's got some sort of pain.
I just saw he was, had an injury setback. And this was like when he was like ramping up and he was like, he was playing with the G League affiliate team in Santa Cruz and he was playing well. And I think the Warriors are about to recall him, but then he has now been temporarily shut down again due to right knee swelling. And there's no official timetable for his return. Nor has the team officially decided on his status moving forward. And this is the same team, the Warriors, that have now lost Steph Curry for at least a couple of weeks while, he's rehabbing an ankle injury. I think ankle injuries are pretty scary given his ankle injuries historically. But it sounds like it's been, like, according to the MRI, it's clean. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. He just needs to rest it, for a couple of weeks until the playoffs are back. Draymond Green's back on the roster and Klay Thompson is still feeling. So similar to the Nets, but obviously in a much better situation to the Nets. It looks like a lot of these guys are kind of going through injuries and I just don't know if they'll be ramped up and fully back by playoff time, which I think is scary given this team is a second seed, third seed around that mark, but this team had championship hopes and probably the most talented team of all their players, including James Wiseman, was on the court. But, you know, injuries suck. And for a team that's been to, is it five NBA finals in a row? This is the result of that. At the tail end of the careers, they're going to get pick up more injuries.
Yeah, I mean, more than just championship hopes, because earlier in the season, Steph was dominating the NBA race.
Steph was MVP.
And they were balling, even without Klay. And we were saying, oh my goodness, what is, like, are the Warriors, this is a new dynasty? And now we've got this string of injuries. And even Draymond, he's coming back from back injury, which is a tough injury to fully recover, right?
But he's just back as well.
And he's just back. Steph is out. And even when he comes back, you know, he's got to ramp back up, right? And with Wiseman, this is a young player, and I feel like we haven't really seen any Wiseman because he's constantly injured.
It's always dangerous for a tall player to get, like, lower leg injuries, I reckon. It's why I'm very, very concerned about Zion, given that he hasn't really played that many games, and yet he's constantly battling problems where he's just getting back to
keep it professional. We definitely don't weigh Zion, we gotta lay off Zion for a little while I feel like just because we've been having a bit too much fun with Zion. When it's, you know, it'd be kind of sad if we lost. Well, we don't know. We just want to see Zion on the court, okay? This is supposed to be some generational player. I've been anticipating Zion. I want to see Zion. though the other big story I thought was Ben Simmons. There's reports that he had recently like a cortisone shot in his back for his back pain.
Epidural.
I don't know what that is, but that sounds very serious.
It's just some kind of injection for the back to help.
I was surprised by it because when it was first reported that he had back issues, I thought, what kind of bullshit reporting is this? It's just some excuse injury. But the fact that he's now getting shots in his back, like, whoa, what, this is no good. This is not, is he going to be back for the playoffs?
I mean, it's safe to say that even if he were to come back to the court by the playoffs, what kind of Ben Simmons would we see given that he's only played like half a practice at Philadelphia for like, over like in 2 years' time? He hasn't played any NBA basketball. He hasn't played any 5-on-5 for over a year. I mean, maybe he's practiced at his home or put up shots or, you know, whatever. But I shudder to think the form that Ben Simmons will be at if he was rushed back start of the playoffs. So I'm not hopeful. I think. And the Nets have generally done this, that they'll just shut down a guy for the season just to be safe, just like Joe Harris, just like Kevin Durant, just like Kyrie Irving. Even though they had postseason hopes, they just shut them down. I'm thinking that's where they're probably at. I think they want to see some investment because there's probably some mind games, like James Harden's playing right now, even maybe if he's got some hamstring problems, but James Harden's playing. So
please, he's got his hamstrings fine.
The Nets want to like, oh, we want to trade. Like Ben Simmons is back and he's happy with us and look at the way he's playing. But, you know, I think the smart thing to do might be to delay his first game till next season, maybe. Introduction to next season, perhaps. I think that's probably the smart play. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe they make it deep in the playoffs and he can play by the conference finals. I don't know.
I think if there's any chance, as long as he can get on the court, you put him on the court. Even if it's just for 5 minutes.
Okay.
Just to get him, like, have some feel. So, you know,
that's fair too.
You're not expecting him to play even 12 minutes or 15 minutes, but just, like, get him on the court. And at least in practice, have him, like, play lightweight. I don't know. It just feels like don't make it a fresh start next year. Like have some sort of ramp up into next year.
I wish that were the case, but I can't say that. That seems hopeful. I'm not optimistic for that.
But I was surprised to see that because I just assumed that he's physically fine, but it clearly he has some issues. And to be honest, I'll give you a bit of insight. Sometimes some of the back issues, it's a mental thing. So I do know this to be, it is a thing. So when you're super stressed or, you know, you're dealing with like, I don't know, just anxiety and stuff, it can take the form of things like lower back pain and back pain in general. Okay, I don't like to harp on negative topics all the time, but I feel like we need to cover this. I'm talking about the Dallas Mavericks. This has been a story that has been developing over the past couple of years, okay? And it came out this week that a longtime Mavs GM, front office staff, just part of Mavericks DNA culture, Donnie Nelson, came out that he is suing the Dallas Mavericks for, I don't know how much he's suing for, like lots of money.
Like, I think it's like
$100 million. He's suing the Dallas Mavericks for $100 million for being wrongly dismissed, fired, basically, because Mavericks are retaliating when he was trying to expose the Mavs for the toxic environment and sexual assault of his nephew. In the hands of Mark Cuban's secondhand man, Jason Luton.
Had sexually harassed and sexually assaulted Donnie Nelson's nephew. 2020 All-Star Weekend in Chicago invited his nephew into Luton's hotel room. And then Nelson said he found out about the alleged incident and settlement only months later, where he was signing contract negotiations with Cuban, but that the talk stalled and eventually ended after he pressed the issue about Luton. And Cuban fired Nelson in June 2021. You've said your piece about Mark Cuban, and I'm one to, I guess, I wouldn't say I defended him, but I'm
to jog your memory, you defended him. Jason Kidd, Jameis Winston, Derrick Rose.
Jason Kidd has nothing to do with Mark Cuban.
See a pattern. Go ahead. Let the listeners decide themselves.
Well, I mean, obviously it's gross, but I guess I don't know enough about it to really question about, because the way I see Cuban for a long time is that at least from the player's perspective, that he's very generous and he does a lot for the team from a player's perspective and creating an atmosphere that is a warm and welcoming for the players.
He lets them sexually assault men and women, whatever they choose. He doesn't discriminate. You like boys? You like young interns, boys?
I mean, I feel like maybe Dirk Nowitzki is from an older generation that's more willing to turn a blind eye. But like, let's see what Luka. I like to think that Luka is a little bit more woke and he's not going to stand for this type of stuff. And I want to see where he's at with his contract negotiations, because obviously the Dallas Mavericks are going to be running to get a pen and paper if Luka agrees to contract to the contract, obviously Supermax. But if he's a bit hesitant or he's a bit cautious about signing a Supermax and committing that many years to this organization that has been, in effect protecting sexual assaulters like Cuban's right-hand man, then I'm going to press on this. I'm going to be more alarmed. And this stuff is already alarming as it is, but I don't know the full stories, and I can't say right now that.
What do you mean you don't know the full stories? This is like, there's been multiple stories over the last 2 years.
There's multiple stories, but I haven't.
There's like a ESPN, like 10-page story on this that you've read. I hope you've read it.
No, I haven't. That's the thing.
Yeah, you saw Mark Cuban. He's like, okay, pass. Innocent. Like him. I know how it works.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. Players owner. Players coach. Like him. Kane. I've been off of this organization for a little while now. Because, like I said, this is fucking God. This is not the first time, okay? I can't stand Mark Cuban. This guy is a phony. He's a fake. After the story broke of the toxic, sexually hostile, I should say, environment in the Dallas Mavericks organization from 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Well, is this worse than the Suns?
This is probably worse than the Suns. Yeah, I'd say this is probably worse than the Suns. Literally, there's accusations of sexual assault here. They had like their wasn't their president or someone? It was a very high up, basketball president abuses power in that organization. And let me be clear. In that story, it was made clear that it was coming from the management, the front offices, not the players. Journalists, cheerleaders, female employees felt comfortable with the players. It was the back office when there was that bro culture, okay? And we had Mark fucking fraud Cuban go on Rachel Nichols. That's all I have. Okay, I rest my case, going on Rachel Nichols to shed his crocodile tear, saying that this is like the toughest moment of his life. He said it was like the hardest moment of his life, that he was sorry, that he didn't know anything. This is an owner that fucking sits in the side court, that sidelines every game. He berates a ref. He practices with the players. Literally, he's on the court shooting. This is a hands-on dude. He said he didn't know anything about it, knew nothing about it. Then goes on Rachel Nichols, cries on Rachel Nichols, and then announces that he's going to hire some black lady, Cynthia Marshall, and made her CEO of the Dallas Mavericks, and told us all that this is not just a front, right? That she's got real power, unfettered power, CEO power to change the organization. And where's Cynthia now? Gone. She's gone. Story's dead. Goodbye. That's Mark Cuban. And guess what? A couple years later, what's changed? Nothing's changed. This is Mark Cuban's right-hand man. You think Mark Cuban doesn't know about this? Or doesn't know his friend if he was doing shenanigans like this? I'm not talking about he knew about this specific case where he touched this intern, right? But I just don't feel like you can hide things like that that well. If you're a right-hand man, you're hanging with Mark Cuban, he must have had some inkling that this guy probably had some personality defects. Now, normally I would say, okay, maybe the guy that's suing, he's after some money. Maybe there's another side to it. If you want to be the devil's advocate, this is Donnie Nelson. Donnie Nelson has been with this organization for 24 years. His life is defined by the Dallas Mavericks. What good is it? Why would he, you know, soil this organization, his own brand, in effect himself, basically, his reputation, in order to do this? There's some shenanigans going on with the Dallas Mavericks, and I encourage the league investigate Mark Cuban. To investigate this team. There needs to be a house cleaning. I wouldn't mind if they moved to Seattle, to be honest.
With Mark Cuban still as the...
No. Oh my God.
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
Oh my God.
No. What I don't understand, like, even I was watching that Nets and Mavs game, and you know, like, Dinwiddie hit that buzzer beater, right? And he was running around the court, and you know the first person he high fives?
Mark Cuban.
Mark Cuban. He runs to the sideline and high fives Mark Cuban. And you know, Mark Cuban can spend his money how he wants. He's obviously a billionaire. If he wants to, I mean, he has of it, but if he wants to run the Mavericks in this way that we see on television, the way he wants, it's fun. I see, like, he gets it with the fans, just like Steve Ballmer, who's another billionaire. He wants to be engaged as a fan and owner of the team, just like back in the day, Dr. Jerry Buss was engrossed as a fan. He was a fan first. These owners are fans first. They're not in... Obviously, they're in it for the money as well. They were trying to make a profit. They're trying to run a business. But at the end of the day, they bought these teams because they're fans first. I can't say that about Joe Tsai, by the way. I think there's probably some money laundering business going on there. Some American espionage, political espionage happening there.
It's because of his race, right? It's because he's Chinese, right?
Anyway, what I don't understand is how there is such a disconnect between what the players go through and what the locker room culture is in the locker room, which a lot of female employees in SI article that I'm just kind of glancing through called it a refuge, a safe haven, compared to the actual behavior and predatory sexual behavior and misogyny that was happening in the corporate locker room, if you will, that the women were working for. Like, you know, they're working part of that corporate side of the organization, and it was rife of predatory sexual behavior. And I just don't understand why the players weren't privy to that information, and why the players like Dirk Nowitzki, that is Mr. Maverick, can defend and love the Mavericks in such a... When he got his jersey retired, he was profuse, like, Mark Cuban was his right-hand man, sitting next to him, crying and, you know, just thanking the organization for the 20, or close to, I think, close to 20 or 20 years of playing there. He's played his entire career there. And we're seeing all these, and Spencer Dinwiddie, a prime example, Luka Doncic probably was signing Supermax with the Mavericks. Spencer Dinwiddie, like I said, high fives Mark Cuban because...
Mark, let's not put Dirk Nowitzki, Luka Doncic, and Dinwiddie in the same sentence, please. Go on.
Well, okay, Jason Kidd. Left the organization. He left the organization multiple times and came back. He came back multiple times, won a championship for the Mavs.
Jason Kidd, I love Jason Kidd.
Left again, didn't get a coaching job with the Mavs. He coached for the Nets, he coached for the Lakers, he coached for the Bucks. Came back. He decided to come back to the Mavericks. And you can't tell me that someone that was part of that organization, a part of that culture that women called a refuge, to not be so, you know, to be so disassociated and so ignorant of what was happening in the corporate world, which you said is rife and has been well documented as like a quote unquote animal house. So it's hard for me to fathom that. And that's why it makes me think these women and Donnie Nelson are lying. They're just in it for the money.
Okay, I think... Are you joking?
Mark Cuban is actually a good guy.
Okay.
No, I'm joking, yeah.
Jesus Christ, you got me for a second.
But you know what I mean? I'm confused as why there's such a disconnect. You know, these sources are obviously true. Donnie Nelson has, he's like Greg Popovich to me. He's like
24 years.
What benefit does this guy who's made millions of dollars already in his basketball life, one of the greatest basketball lives we've ever had, Hall of Famer, I assume, what benefit does he have to call out this Mavs organization? Is beneath him. He doesn't need to do this. He's doing it because it's the right thing to do. So I just, you know what I mean? I'm genuinely confused as to why there's such a disconnect between what the players are going through, who seem to love Mark Cuban, and what the corporate staff are experiencing, women specifically are experiencing in the corporate life.
Donnie Nelson in the lawsuit produced like a contract or an agreement that whereby the Mavs would have paid him $54 million to keep quiet and not to erase the story.
Like an NDA.
And like an NDA. Like, in other words, Donnie Nelson refused that because he didn't need the money. $54 million, that's a lot of money. You know, I know he's suing for $100 million, but I think he's suing for $100 million to make a point, to make a statement, to make it hurt. Like, if you really needed money, guess what's easier? It's easier just to take $54 million and keep it quiet.
And it's also easier to not go to court against a powerful organization, cherished fan base.
Go into the risk of losing that lawsuit.
Yeah, and possibly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Tarnish your reputation.
You take
as well,
the money.
Bye.
I think I can definitely believe how there is a disconnect between the players and the front office, because I feel like in the players, it's cut off. There's almost like a sanctuary.
But how? I don't understand.
Because there's probably not a lot of females in sort of the players' circle in terms of the locker room versus the back office.
I understand like a Jalen Brunson or, you know, like I'm thinking of an older player. A fucking Sean Marion that might not be privy to all these ins and outs and goings. But when star players love playing for the Mavs, like Dirk Nowitzki, like, you know, like a Luka Doncic, like a Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, when these star players love playing for the Mavs.
Can you stop putting Dinwiddie,
you know,
into Spencer
this? Dinwiddie is, Dinwiddie is especially. Back to back buzzer beaters.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts.
He's on that all time list already. Oh. When these guys love playing for the Mavericks, it just makes you question, like, how much do they really know? It just bogs my mind that they don't know anything that's happening in the, you know, in the corporate.
I can believe it, because on the corporate side, you know, they're doing sales, they're doing promotions. On the basketball locker room, they're practicing, they're training, essentially. So it is two different worlds. And when they do intersect, it's usually probably through like some public event, public context, rather than the day-to-day. Because these sexual assaults are happening, I think, it's during the boring stuff. It's during the everyday.
I mean, Spencer Dinwiddie is very well read. He's been accused, and for right or wrong, like being the smartest guy in the room. He reads this kind of stuff, right?
Can we stop talking about Spencer Dinwiddie?
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, when his contract is up, like, I think his contract is up next. Like, do you think the Mavs are going to give him the max extension? I mean, yeah, I think they will. But like, do you think Spencer will want to sign the max with the Mavericks? There's one thing to not be privy to this firsthand, but they read this shit, no? About their own place of work. They work there.
I mean, it's hard for me to, like, I'm not going to judge any of the players if they decide to still want to associate themselves with the organization, just because on that previous article, it said that it didn't spill into the locker room. So in the locker room, it's just environment. So if they didn't know, they didn't know. The thing with that article is that the females, they're saying that this was swept under the rug by corporate. In other words, they complained and corporate swept it under the rug. At no point did they say that, you know, they were trying to reach out to the players, or that somehow the players knew and it was also swept under the rug. So it gave me the sense that it was two different worlds, that they were isolated. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, like maybe they need to be more integrated, I don't know. Then I wouldn't blame a Spencer Dinwiddie if he gets a better deal, sweeter deal from the Mavs, because his experience of the org is totally different. Mm. And I would imagine that the players from their perspective would think, okay, now it's gotten too far. So there will be some change. Third time, second time, like at some point you would think that real change would have to happen. Someone check Cynthia Marshall's LinkedIn. Where's she working? We need her services for another couple of months. We need to upgrade her. Chief CEO, senior CEO, pro, chairman CEO.
I just want to say, like, since Spencer Dinwiddie joined the team, I mean, the last 10, the 7-3, they lost the last two, but Spencer Dinwiddie didn't play the last game. They got blown out by Charlotte. But contrast that with DeMar DeRozan's Chicago Bulls. They're 0-15 against top three teams in each conference, and they're 2-8 in the last 10 and are on a three-game losing streak. And now they've dropped down to fifth seed.
Why are you doing this to me?
So, yeah, they don't have to worry about the Nets anymore. Oh. But they've also lost home court advantage as well. So, you know, like, let's put this in the context here. Like, you like to shit on D'Lo, you like to shit on Spencer Dinwiddie, but, you know,
oh my God,
those guys are helping the team.
Let me tell our listeners, when you go after Kane's team or players, I'm telling you, you're in for a world of pain. This guy does not forget. Let me be clear here. These players aren't even on the Nets. They're not associated with the Nets, and yet you still... It's okay.
I was like...
It's okay not to, like... It's okay to criticize some of these players, Kane. Like, they're no longer with your team. You realize that, right?
I was, like, trying to, like, get you to empathize with the Nets losing against the Blazers. I'll never forget this, honestly. I'll never forget this. I was like, oh, the Nets will play... You know, like, when someone's like, oh, you know, my hair looks bad, like, doesn't, like the hairdresser fucked it up. And you're like, oh, that's the worst haircut in history. You know, hairdressers are meant to make you look good, right? That's how it felt. You're like, I'm like, oh, so the Blazers are beating them. I'm like, how's that possible? And you're like, oh, you know the Blazers are trying to tank, right? This team's actively trying to lose, and you're losing to them by 20.
Okay, look, I admit I have been insensitive. I will be a better person, Kane. It's not who I am. I will be a better person. To go on to the Mavs, what do you think should happen here? What do you think will happen here? I don't think I have it in me to watch Mark Cuban go on national TV again to cry.
I hope it doesn't get to that. I hope he just sells the team outright. But I can't help it. Like, Luke Kerr is that good of a player that I have to watch Mavericks games, you know? Maybe I just want to tell the listeners how I introduced you to the Nets thread. I was like, I kind of linked you to this Reddit thread, and I was like, this is this gives some explanation as to why Nets fans are always going to love former Nets players like Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, D'Lo, Jared Allen.
It was incredible. I read a lot of the posts there, and it literally sounded like you posted them. I was like, what the fuck? I hope they're real people.
My million burner accounts.
Yeah, that you like reply to yourself, but you're having like some weird inner conversation with yourself. God bless them. Okay, Ken, we've gone way over. Whoa, Jesus Christ. We've gone way over. Do you want to promote this Reddit forum? Because I'd really encourage any closet Net fan to visit this forum. Like, literally, there's probably a Kenny Atkinson like thread in there somewhere.
Actually, I don't think that many people... I think it's the Reddit Go Nets. I think it's the official Nets subreddit. But they don't really talk about Kenny that much. A few times I've commented, I was talking about Kenny as like part of that 18-19 team, that culture that brought up this team to get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Kenny was like instrumental in building that culture and allowing that to gestate to where they are at the moment with the super team. This team that allowed to get to trade for James Harden. I can't imagine any team in the history of NBA, let alone the Brooklyn Nets, being able to absorb a top 75 player of all time, a top 10 player of all time, and a top 20 player of all time. It blows my mind. Like, this isn't the Lakers or the Boston Celtics. This is the Brooklyn Nets. It's like if they literally have the same standing as the Charlotte Hornets. It's like if the Charlotte Hornets, one day you got Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and Dennis Rodman all together. Honestly, that's how good like that trio, if they stayed together and they were sane, could have been. They would have won multiple championships if they were healthy And they didn't have egos, you know?
But Kenny had to make them run. He had to make them run around the gym. Kyrie said, no can do.
I mean, it's not Kenny's fault. Kenny enabled this and he should be fucking celebrated. He doesn't deserve this fucking wasteland coaching jobs that he's gotten since being let go from the Nets. That's why I love Spencer. That's why I love D'Lo, because they were part of that fabric of the culture of this team that made the Nets relevant. And more than relevant, made them historic. They were so historically good because of their success.
I'm not going to disagree with you, because I think the contracts since that season has proven that, you know, that was a special team. That was a special team with a group that overachieved, including Kenny Atkinson, who became, like, you know, obviously, you know, part of that Nets team DNA. But when you get large, you know, big time players like KD and Kyrie, they bring their own culture, so you can't really, sometimes this happens.
Yeah, that's fair. But you know, this isn't the New York Knicks. They chose Brooklyn Nets, you know? Like, I can't remember another time in free agency where a big time player of that of Kevin Durant's magnitude would choose a small market like that.
Okay, this is our longest show ever. Look, you're right. I wish Kenny Atkinson well. I liked Kenny. I can be convinced that Kenny can get back on the Nets. Assuming that the Nets win a championship, I would not be surprised if they bring back Kenny.
I mean, I hope so. I think he's a better coach than Steve Nash, I'll put it that way. If Kenny had Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and they were on board with Kenny, then I think he'll be a way better coach.
Kenny, I wish Kenny well. Bruce Arians, I like you, but be careful, okay? Just let Kenny be a lesson to you.
The stars run the show.
Goodbye.
Okay, thank you. See you.
Thank you for listening to Your NBA Podcast with David and Kane. If you enjoyed our show, please tweet us at Your NBA Podcast.